Machine learning and artificial intelligence are powerful technologies that have the potential to fundamentally change every industry, and manufacturing is no exception. That's because manufacturing is all about processes, and for as long as there has been manufacturing, businesses have been striving to automate and improve those processes in any way possible. During the Industrial Revolution, for example, they did so by replicating the assembly line that Henry Ford pioneered in his factories. Many years later, during the Digital Revolution, they brought computers to those assembly lines and to the many workers supporting their business. More recently, we've witnessed the growing use of sensors and the rise of the Internet of Things, where manufacturing equipment is not only all interconnected, but also producing a constant stream of valuable data and analytics. It's this last step that has paved the way for major advancements in manufacturing by opening the door to the use of machine learning and artificial intelligence. Today, I'll be talking with Matthew Putman, the CEO of Nanotronix, which is a company that offers a wide range of solutions that start with super-resolution microscopy. Their automated optical inspection systems include a suite of advanced computing vision, machine learning, and artificial intelligence analyzers that have become an integrated part of production processes for many manufacturing solutions. We'll be talking about how miniaturization, sensors, and robotics are different from what we think of as traditional consumer-facing ML solutions. We'll also get into the difference between hardware-controlled systems with sensors and software processes, and also where one focuses on optimization. Stay tuned. So, before we even get kind of deeper into manufacturing, I'd love to get your vision of kind of process management in general and how you see the evolution of big data, kind of cloud-based solutions have really affected general how businesses are managing processes. And then we can apply that a little bit more to manufacturing a bit. So what's your sense of kind of the maturity and where ML and AI is used in terms of process management?
It seems to me like ML and AI have been very successful when it comes to, you know, optimization of advertising and optimization of recommendation algorithms, very much led by a few of the large companies that we know. Where it hasn't been used as much is distilling all of that big data for running a business internally. We specifically look at manufacturing, but when we think of manufacturing, that really applies to clinics and to that point where things go from research into production. In that area, AI and machine learning have not been touched very much. And one reason is that the cloud itself doesn't automatically enable it. There's a lot that has to happen on a local level. We're seeing this being a huge drive to make industries more efficient, but being able to distill useful data is still a challenge for internally running businesses.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. We're seeing the big companies providing infrastructures. So your Google and Facebook and Amazon provide a lot of horizontal infrastructure layers. And what we're seeing as investment fund are, you know, some companies are beginning to differentiate themselves by picking a business process, kind of a narrow point of view, whether it's in fintech or healthcare, and, you know, optimizing it beyond the next level of analytics and beginning to leverage AI a little further. But I think we're beginning to see that emerge as a newer technology for sure.
Yes.
Now, manufacturing is going to change. Yeah, whether it's robotics, 3D printing will be a game changer. I think we'll see maybe the ability of a company to do simulations before they even kind of build a process. But maybe all of it gets down to eventually there's just going to be more data, whether it's sensors or IoT. And I think that's what we're going to be talking about today. And when you see what's happening with manufacturing, what's your key takeaway as to kind of what's happening now and what matters the most, I think?
There's a few points that you touched on that we can dig a little bit deeper into. For the first idea being big data, there are already a lot of data being acquired in a factory. Now, we think about, by the way, manufacturing is the largest segment that you can possibly think of, much larger than advertising or even fintech. But it's one that for some reason is last to arrive when it comes to processes of how you optimize that big data using something like artificial intelligence. It's a bit ironic because those things that are manufactured, such as semiconductors, to make all of the other technologies you mentioned possible, aren't taking advantage of
what they're helping to enable.
The things that we notice as important are that, you know, this is true with everything, but it's especially true in manufacturing. There are a lot of sensors already. There's a lot of big data being accumulated, but we kind of say that data is the new pollution, especially when it comes to manufacturing. Manufacturing has been done the way that it has been done for the last 75 years. It's just accumulating a lot more data. But that data is being used in a way to put, you know, at the end of a process or when designing something new, making decisions some about how we control a process. But what it's not being used is dynamically to make choices. And in order to rapidly, iteratively improve products. And that ends up eliminating waste. It ends up making the next generation of products occur faster. And this applies to all of those areas. And we could dig into if you want to talk about additive manufacturing, as you mentioned, or manufacturing of the next electronics or next pharmaceuticals, up to you. But the same principle applies, that right now there are sensors, there's data being accumulated, but there's not optimization of that for creating new technologies.
Sure. And so I want to talk about a little bit more about what you say it hasn't really been used yet for decision making. So I often think of a process, and you know, we'll just use a Henry Ford metaphor. There was one process, and maybe, of course, there's always anomalies, and therefore someone has to stop the assembly line. But if we get to the points of more data and robotics, what are your thoughts then when you talk about kind of changing things on the fly and reacting to the data? Because it seems to me that would sort of be inherently built into a decent robotic system or a decently designed process. And I have a sense that you're going a little further beyond that.
Well, we're going a lot further with something that was deeply controversial even a few years ago. But now that we see progress in other areas, such as you see Google's DeepMind making decisions completely on its own to beat itself even at the game Go, the most complicated game in the world. So we're realizing that human decision-making does not allow us to make these predictive decisions real-time. The only way to make those real-time decisions for change is to allow a learning system to do it in real time. That's a huge move and something that is, you know, a little bit scary at first thought, because it does remove the human element from the immediate decision-making process. It allows humans to still remain creative in deciding what they want to optimize for. But just to give a little bit of basic history without getting didactic about it, a process has generally been controlled in order to create the same product over and over again that no matter when and where it's being created. That makes perfect sense. It's the way that Deming rebuilt Japan after it was destroyed after World War II by creating something called SPC. This made complete sense. It ended up leading to eventually things like Six Sigma and lean manufacturing that you might be familiar with. But it assumes that you control every bit of the process piece by piece so that humans can say, I'm going to, you know, accurately measure each of those. In an AI system that learns, it's optimizing for a factory that is fully efficient. And when you do that and you are able to iterate this better, this is actually a huge change to take humans out of that decision-making process on each, what we think of as a node or a production. So it's a new platform completely. I think revolutionary in ways that don't seem it when I just say it in that way.
No, I think it actually makes a lot of sense. Let me extrapolate it, kind of the vision of where we see applied artificial intelligence going, which is just that we used to, you know, for years we've been optimizing existing business processes. And kind of the vision of applied artificial intelligence is that new processes will be created that didn't necessarily exist before, that weren't necessarily something that a human had thought of before. And I hadn't really thought about it, particularly in terms of something, I understand it probably better in a purely software run process where there's no machinery involved. And yet here we're talking about manufacturing, which involves machinery. So which one's harder in terms of letting the AI decide the optimal way to execute and define a process when you've got machinery perhaps in the middle. And I think it's hard enough as a visionary concept in a pure software world, even more of an interesting challenge perhaps in manufacturing. So can you talk about kind of both of those in terms of software driven and then software driven with hardware piece parts, i.e. tools?
Right. We're lucky that other great thinkers that have created, you know, convolutional neural nets and reinforcement learning and things like this have handled a lot of the heavy lifting of what it means to have closed loop machine learning systems. So on the software side, it's still an enormous challenge, especially to, you know, get talent together. I mean, I've read that recently that there are, you know, less than 100,000 really top AI engineers that can deal with this type of thing. So, but we know it's possible. There's good architecture behind NVIDIA chips, for instance, for GPUs. So we know it's possible for software, as you say, and you also have the power of the cloud. You have so much computing power that it's not something you have to worry about locally. Manufacturing isn't a particularly different challenge as algorithmically, but it is a hardware challenge. And by hardware, I mean both computational hardware and manufacturing equipment hardware. You have to do a lot more locally than you would do with some of these other technologies you spoke about. Now, that's wonderful in a way because it's extremely fast. You're right, you're taking information directly from production equipment itself. But since there already are controls, and especially if we can put sensors on everything that communicate not just us, but with our partners, or even if it wasn't us, to be able to accumulate that information, the gathering of the information isn't difficult. The control aspect itself also, you know, while presenting challenges, we already know that machinery can be controlled. You know that you can set the temperature of something to reach 100 degrees C or 80 degrees C. So it's the AI's choice which is most appropriate to reach the end goal and the product that you'd like. So all of the pieces of it are classical engineering problems. Putting them together is something that takes, you know, a group of people and a group of great engineers to put together. But the building blocks are there, just like the building blocks for the cloud were there and for other types of AI applications are there.
Just in terms of simplicity, for me, I understand the temperature setting. I understand how that can be optimized and that could be easily done at a specific point in the manufacturing process. Is that your view when you talk about optimizing over the next few years, that we'll make each step better for a better, you know, so the input ends up with a better output based on what's happening at that particular step of the process? Or are you beginning to also think about how the entire X step process is optimized and maybe at some point it becomes less than X steps over time?
It's not that, and this is making light of something that probably is more complex than this, but it's not what happens at each step that we care about or that we're optimizing for. It's what happens at the end. It's for getting the best product. Whether through a feedback and feed forward process, through these loops that have been, you know, that we know about from the way that other artificial intelligence systems work, there's freedom of the AI to wait and change based on anomalies that may occur during the process, or based on just knowledge that has been gained through having run the process many times. There are also some priors and inputs that need to go into this if we get, you know, a bit more technical about it. But really, it's not about making sure that you're at 100 degrees, for instance, on the temperature, or that you're extruding something at a certain rate. It's about making sure that if it was a different temperature, you're extruding it then at a different rate to get the same product. And, you know, a process isn't just temperature and extrusion in that particular option. Not everything has extrusion, for instance. However, it doesn't. That part is something that machines will optimize for in order to get the final product. It's the final product that we care about. It's not those individual nodes. The AI will care about those nodes and making sure that it's weighted properly and that it's adjusting for any anomalies, but it's not making sure that we can control each one.
Right, nor should we, because we don't know any better. Now, I guess if I can take this to a higher level, then this is, we're going, I believe, and you have to confirm for me, that we're going beyond a traditional supervised learning model to much more of a reinforcement learning, where in this case, the reinforcer might be the end product. Is that a fair categorization? With supervised learning, where we're, you know, where the humans are labeling and training and, you know, looking at the output as opposed, or looking at the output along the way, as opposed to just letting this thing run and telling it, look, here's what you need to do. You need to win the game of Go. You need to give me this best product. And we do a little bit of reinforcement along the way at the end point.
Yeah. So it's, I think the ultimate goal is it's as semi-reinforced as possible. So the supervision part really comes from our basic understanding of what each part means. So, and does. So there are inputs that we have through knowledge that these sensors have gathered before we've even put an AI system into place that teach us something about, you know, what an extruder is. I keep saying extruder, but that certainly can be a press, or there's a number of things it can be. There's still a certain amount of rule based that goes into this. There are things that a controller is not capable of. It may not be capable of going over a certain temperature. That's a rule that we know. And this is true with the game of Go too. There's a board and a certain amount of, even though it seems like limitless amounts of choices, there's still a board with a certain amount of stones, and or there's chess pieces that do a certain thing. So there are some priors and there are some experiences to be gathered. So at this point, at least, it won't be completely unsupervised, but it is this loop that is much closer to an unsupervised system than other types of AI.
Right. So that is the evolution. We're not moving to a singularity per se, but we are definitely moving away from a traditional supervised process to letting these machines kind of do as much as they can to optimize that final product.
Right. We'll be a lot more efficient than humans. We'll just be in a position to decide what we should be optimizing for. That's the exciting thing. It doesn't remove humans. It allows humans to decide what new type of game we should be playing, if we want to use this analogy of the games.
Right, right. I would like to talk a little bit about nanotronics and kind of talk about what you've done with microscopes as a case study in terms of what you've automated and how you get this integrated into a production process. So can you talk a little bit about that for me, please?
Sure. I don't mean to step back, but if you think about manufacturing, nanotronics definitely focuses on nodes in the manufacturing process and where the most data can be gained. Computer vision and the ability to acquire good images and to be able to detect and classify anomalies at multiple stages of a production process is perhaps the most important nodes in a process, because it gives you a lot of information that is unavailable other places. And there has been a lot of work in computer vision. So you can imagine in a factory, all of those areas we're talking about, and something that's extruded or a car part, it being imaged at higher resolution. So we use white light, which for other things as well, but the idea is to have super fast throughput. So we're not using things like electron microscopy, which is very slow and only can be sampled and pulled out into a lab. We're doing things very quickly and acquiring trillions and trillions points of data, you know, in minutes, and removing all of the unnecessary waste. You know, we talk about data as being the data pollution that we talked about, and detecting anomalies, running it through an AI system where it's iterating on those to distinguish and classify what those are, so that it can tell a process, you are producing a certain type of anomaly at this time. And so we have customers that do this for one layer of a process up to 300 layers of a process. And so it's a case study in the sense that it's providing a huge amount of information that can inform a process. The next stage of it will be the control of those layers of the process. Right now, it is, you know, a flagging, I'd say. It's a knowing where things happen so that a process can be adjusted. It's not a full loop yet, where we are optimizing for the end product, but we are measuring every layer of the product, and we know where problems occur in every layer of the product.
So we're clearly on a journey, and I'm good that it's early. You know, we're on this kind of where we're going to be in the future. We have to start somewhere today. But when we talked earlier about business process, and you kind of, we talked a little bit on ad tech, right? So, you know, one of the things that's happening in marketing technology is kind of A/B testing. Now, here we are, you've got this imaging, you capture things going on. And if an AI is going to learn, if it's going to get better, is there the concept of failure in the process and do some A/B testing? And this may be a totally incorrect metaphor, but or not even a metaphor, maybe a totally incorrect approach. Does that get done? Because obviously you're absorbing data, you're learning things. And when I think about a software run process, it's a little easier because you can learn some stuff. But here you are manufacturing real-time goods could get ruined or something. How do you learn even more from that?
Yeah, right. The stakes are pretty high. I mean, and we're dealing with everything from, you know, pharma and biologics to, you know, single wafers that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the stakes are really high for learning and making mistakes along the way. There is a certain amount of, I guess this is where you would call the supervised part of it that has to occur first. And I guess that's where we are in that process. We are learning a lot, meaning trillions of data points that are reduced to fairly sparse data, so that when an AI system is turned on for a full factory, there will be so many what will actually be priors that will be put into a system that it won't be risky. So you could think of the work we've been doing for the last 7 years as being unrelated in a way, but it's all 100% related when you consider all of the data that's been gathered that wasn't able to be gathered before.
And it really isn't. There isn't. It actually, it's no different. Even if it's a little longer startup time, if at the end of the day you produce more, better, faster, you win. It's no different than doing early bug testing when you're writing code. If you catch a bug earlier in the cycle, it is well worth it to spend the time and effort to catch bugs early than later in the process. So take your time, use the learning you have, use the prior data, and get this process optimized early on, because then the end product is going to be that much better.
Yeah, very, very good analogy. Exactly like that.
And, you know, I often think about, you know, BPM as the higher level element. You're at the, you are taking that smaller process control piece and making sure it's mapped to the big, large end product. I think we're on the same page here.
Yeah, seems like it.
So is this the ultimate end of manufacturing optimization? Or are there thoughts of nanofactories? And are they a different vision that's unrelated to this?
You don't get to micro and nano factories. You don't get to ultimate efficiency with no waste. You don't get to super iterations that are generatively designed that lead to, I guess, the dreams of what molecular nanotechnology was without this step of control that we're talking about. All the things that we just talked about, you don't get there without it. So you will see a certain shrinking of factories. You will see a rapid closer to molecularly precise manufacturing, the more that the process, which by the way, we call AIPC instead of SPC, so artificial intelligence process control, you will see it start to pop up. And eventually, I think there will be this triggering point where nanofactories, so factories that build things the size of the factory itself because they're molecularly precise, the only way that that can happen, we believe, is through doing the things that you and I just talked about.
So this was great for me. I learned a lot. Thank you, Matthew. Really appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcasts.